So I think people, men especially, they hear the word provision and they think only of material provision. It's only, I've got to make sure that the bills are paid and that the bacon is on the table, which that is a part of it, absolutely. But I think that can so overshadow us that it actually leads us away from really providing. So absolutely, you should be providing for your family, but you should also be providing emotional support for your wife. You should also be providing modeling for your children. You should be providing a home that is able to be grace-filled and to be lived in and to be something that, I mean, none of us are perfect, but something that really is a place that you're working toward.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today I'm with Mike. Mike is a husband, pastor, counselor, and father to three young boys. And Mike enjoys reading all kinds of books: history, theology, literature, liturgy, fantasy, and science fiction. So today we're going to talk with Mike about what he's doing with his family that is having a positive impact. Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Tim?
Good, thank you. Why don't we just start by you telling me one to three of the significant memories you have from your own upbringing?
I was adopted out of foster care, and my...
How old were you?
Well, I was taken from my bio family at 6 or 9 months for abuse and malnutrition and neglect, and then kept in foster care until about 4. So, but I was in the same home throughout that, so it wasn't moved home to home. I was kept in the same home, and then I remember like the worker coming, that kind of thing, but I don't remember actually going back. You know, I remember being in the car, I remember hiding from the worker, but I don't remember actually going back, which also brings up the fact that memory starts around 2. So that was something that I also is apparently unusual for a lot of people, but growing up, some significant memories for me, probably one of the first ones that is probably kind of illustrative of the type of household that I was raised in was my father had come back with cable. And I'm 40 this year, so I'm aging myself a little bit, but a cable box was big back then. That was a big purchase. That was a big thing. And I was, like I said, 5 or 6. I was kindergarten, so 5 or 6. And my first thought when he comes in with it is, can we make rent? That was my very first thought. And so it's kind of illustrative of a 6-year-old, how they, you know, most 6-year-olds would not think, can I make rent? But it was just part of growing up was kind of being the parent to parent myself a lot of times, or being brought into adult or parent situations.
So I guess what you're saying is that you came out of foster. Were you adopted into a family?
I was adopted into a family.
And then, but your family was relatively poor.
It was relatively poor, and it was because of my father's drinking, largely. I mean, it was also money mismanagement, but like the very first time that I remember riding around in a car, I'm in the back seat, you know, on the floorboards, driving around very late at night, looking to see where my mom is going from bar to bar. So it was unusual. It was an unusual childhood in a lot of senses. So my view of fatherhood was largely shaped originally by what not to do. Just between, there was some physical abuse, not as bad as some have it, but it was present. It was there. For both me and my mother, and then for a lot of emotional abuse, a lot of different things like that. Like,
do you feel comfortable telling me one of those stories that comes to mind from that time?
Yeah. So I was at a friend's birthday party, or it might have been a family. My father showed up late, drunk. He was a baseline drunk. I mean, that was pretty much the normal, like.
How old were you?
I'm not sure if I ever saw him sober. I was about 6. six then. Because we moved around a lot. So I base it on certain age ranges. I know them about 2 years where I was based on where we were living. We moved 9 times between when I was adopted or even before, between when I was brought in and middle school. We moved 9 different times. So it's kind of very much pointed to where I, I was about 6 at that time and showed up late. And that's important because it's a different car. Shows up late, then gets bored, drunk. And it's a farm type party. There was like a horse he could take around. He just steals a kitten because it's a farm kitten, just steals it, throws me in the car, and drives off with me drunk. I start crying because I'm honestly feeling really guilty. Wasn't so much scared about the driving drunk thing. That happened so often. It wasn't even a concern, really. But the stealing the kitten was a big deal for me. It was just in a drunken state, he interpreted that as I didn't want his gift. He viewed that as like a gift. I'm not sure if he thought it was my birthday, which is quite possible in that state. He's driving at the time. But he starts taking and hitting me about the head and the feet and trying to grab a hold of me and slam me into the back of the car, the back of the car seat, as we're driving, because I'm crying. I'm trying to fly around so he then just goes for the legs and area and then takes the cat and throws it out the window as we're driving. Doesn't slow down, doesn't stop. Causing me to cry more, which then he does stop the car to continue to beat me, and then drives me back to the party, drops me off, tells me that I've ruined the day or whatever, and then I don't see him for a day or two after that. Which would not be unusual. There was several philandering incidents. There were several, I never exactly knew when he was going to show up or when he was and when he wasn't, and so it was a whole thing. It was, he's in and out, but he was always a presence. It was there. Especially early on, which caused me to rely heavily on stuff that was open. Because once I could go to school, second day of kindergarten, I was walking myself to school. Like, once the route was shown, then it was, you do it. And which gave me the opportunity to be out of the house. And then when school was closed, it was churches and libraries, because they were open. I wasn't sure if he was going to be there, but I knew at night he was probably not. He was probably going to be out at the bar. He's probably going to be out somewhere. And so I started hanging around churches a lot, hanging around libraries that were open, because they were, back then, well, churches didn't lock their doors. They kept them open during the day. And so I would go into empty sanctuaries. I was attracted to both the peace there and the fact that a lot of them looked like castles. That was fun to me as a kid. So I read a lot and I prayed a lot. So much so that later on as I grew up, the two things that I could not be for Halloween were the devil or a monk, because my mother was so concerned that I would actually become a monk and not give her grandchildren that she would not let me dress as a monk for Halloween. But it was a different childhood, but it was very defining as far as trying to figure out where I'm going, what I'm doing, and answering those questions at a fairly early age. So I knew that I wanted to be a pastor by the time I was early elementary. And it never really wavered. Sometimes it was pastor, but it never really wavered for me. And eventually that sense of direction, that sense of purpose, that sense of having to, grow up a little early, served me very well in high school. It was not something that I necessarily understood or picked up on at the time, but I've had several people comment on it reflecting back that apparently I came off very confident in high school when most people are not feeling confident, but that was largely to me because it was just, I had already gone through those struggles. I'd already done that stuff. I knew who I was. I had no, journey at that point to self-define. And so that's something that people remembered about. I went to a small high school, a small town in Iowa, And so people remembered that about me, even to the point of I had a fellow classmate call me out of the blue after he was struggling in the military. I want to say I hadn't talked to him close to 10 years, maybe 8 at that point. But out of the blue, that was one of the first things that he remembered, was that he viewed me as not, which I would have called myself that, but I also wouldn't have thought in those categories. I just very much so just do what you got to do.
Yeah. So what was the, for you, the turning point between, you know, growing up with a neglectful and abusive dad? And then was it like, what was the turning point for you going, this is the direction of my life now? You said you spent time in churches, but, you know, people spend time in a lot of buildings. What was it about that transition that made you go, this is where I'm going?
Honestly, it was the difference between in service, seeing, being taught, being instructed, seeing, and then questioning, like that kind of instruction really was large for me. Like it was something that I ate up. Like at seven, I was trying to figure out how the Trinity and Santa Claus worked. And so I figured out, I was like, oh, well, the Father never becomes incarnate. The Son still has his body. You can see that the Father's right hand, but the Holy Spirit comes as like a dove. He comes as fire. He comes. So is he the fat man that helps us celebrate Christ's birth? And I think the answer I got was sure. And I just kind of went with, but like, I very much had a more of a theological leaning brain. And so,
even at a young age.
And so for me, the defining point really against like acting out against, because I mean, I would not have been described as a very easy child in elementary. And so for me, the turning point against acting out, against doing stuff was Plato. I found Plato in a library. I read, I'm sure that there was stuff from the Bible that informed and oriented that. But I found his Dialogues in Republic in a joint volume in the library. And the overarching sense of the fact that there was justice, that there was a point, that there was orientation toward good, that there was an ultimate good, right? His theory of forms, that was very appealing for me. The idea of there is such a thing as, you know, dadness, and this is just a version from that, a corrupted version, but a version from that. You know, that whole theory of the ideals and everything, and the strong sense of justice and the strong sense of purpose and unity and absolutes, where it was,
there's an absolute truth there that we're trying to attain, and it exists sort of outside of the material world in some sense, and the material world matches it to some degree or not.
Yeah. So that was
very interesting.
That would be a big turning point around 10 for that.
So did you become a Christian at a young age then, or what would you have called yourself at that age?
I would have called myself a Christian at that point. I was, like I said, I was very attracted to church, but I didn't have a conversion experience. I wasn't a believer until six, seven. Again, it could have been seven because that was the same house. So it could have been either six or seven. I don't remember what the sermon was. I remember what the Sunday school was. And I remember it was on the prodigal son and the flannel graph and everything. And when the invitation to come forward was given, I came forward. I asked to go forward and was taken aside, said the sinner's prayer. And I would really look back on that as my conversion experience. Like that was my, I know some people when they're six, they just go with it, but it wasn't really any encouragement to do so. And there was fruit and growth and change, as well as, I mean, I was sharing the gospel in third grade. I remember another girl was asking stuff about, you know, God or whatever. And I just walked her through the gospel and, you know, was sharing the gospel with her. And that was something that, so I mean, I would say that I became a Christian at six. And I would say that it was largely undefined what that meant, though, because my family moved so often, you know, it was just part of keeping the abuse quiet. You just keep on moving. Also not keeping a job because, you know, drinking, keep on moving. So there was no...
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Oh, and they just went to whatever church felt friendly to whoever. But that was the odd thing, though, is my father was driving force and going to church. He insisted on going to church on Sunday, which is, I'm not sure if that comes from his Reformed Mormon background or reconstituted Mormon background. It's the RLDS. Now they're Community of Christ, but whatever they used to be called. I'm not sure if that is a kind of a law-based mandate that he instilled or if he found some attraction there. I don't know, but my mother would much prefer to put on Hour of Power Robert Schuller and not go anywhere. And so it was very much, ironically, very much my father that drove us to be involved in church, although he didn't necessarily like talking or doing anything theological, anything with God. He liked music, and he liked really liked the music about it, and he had a decent voice. And I'm not sure if that was part of it, but he was, my family's Irish, and then my background is Irish. My biological background is Irish as well. And so the whole idea of being a drunkard who likes music is almost stereotypical, but it was very much that. It was very much, in a family full of Irishmen, he was the one that was considered the drunkard. That, just saying something. But the music really drew him, so I'm not sure if that was what it was, or because the more conservative ones he didn't like. He liked to tend to go to the more theologically liberal ones, and that was because there wasn't that much talk of God. There wasn't that much talk of Bible. There wasn't much talk of, I'm not saying that's true for every theologically liberal church, but for the ones in the 90s in the Midwest, that's very much true. It was very much just, you know, we're going to sing, do readings, and then we'll maybe have a 5 to 10 minute talk about feeling good, and God might be mentioned. And so those are the type of churches that he was really drawn to. And then, like I said, my mom didn't really go for much of anything. And then my mom's family was divided Lutheran and Catholic. So, which neither one really participated much in either, but if you ask them, they were either Lutheran or Catholic. And so it was very much an intellectual experience trying to figure out what the Bible was about, who God was. But, and so when I got to churches that actually taught or more or invested, I was very much trying to ask questions, trying to be there, trying to figure it out. And so it was very much of a wandering journey for me theologically, where I would call myself Christian, but I wouldn't really say I had a faith tradition. I wouldn't really say that I had a rooted, typical Christian experience. It kind of just went where we went, you know, Presbyterian, Methodist, Lutheran, E-Free, ironically, pretty much everything but Baptist, which is what I ended up becoming a pastor of, but it was wandering.
Yeah, no, that's good. So, and your journey going from, you know, becoming, growing up in the family you did, to then becoming a father yourself, you have a few things. You know, when we talked before, you mentioned provision, priority, and presence as like three major items that you think are important for dads to do for their families. Let's walk through each one of those. So provision. Help me understand, what does that look like in your family? What does that look like for men from your perspective?
So I think people, men especially, they hear the word provision and they think only of material provision. It's only, I've got to make sure that the bills are paid and that the bacon is on the table, which that is a part of it, absolutely. But I think that can so overshadow us that it actually leads us away from really providing. So absolutely, you should be providing for your family, but you should also be providing emotional support for your wife. You should also be providing modeling for your children. You should be providing a home that is able to be grace-filled and to be lived in and to be something that I mean, none of us are perfect, but something that really is a place that you're working toward. One of the quotes that I absolutely love comes from G.K. Chesterton, where he said, "The most extraordinary thing in the world is an ordinary man, an ordinary woman, and an ordinary family." It's this idea of why are we doing this, right? What's the telos? What's the point, right? And C.S. Lewis says that, you know, the home is that to which all other occupations are oriented toward, right? The reason why we go out is to be able to provide and come back here. And unfortunately, I feel like too often it becomes what I call the myth of Pharaoh, right? Pharaoh is in Egypt telling Moses, the only reason why you want to go and leave is because you're lazy. The only reason why you want to go and worship is because you're lazy. The only reason why you're not doing this is because you're lazy. And we've really fallen into this idea that if I'm not doing, producing, making, earning, then I don't have a point and I'm lazy. Or this is my point. And then it becomes a circle that wears us out. So many men are so worn out by what they think of as provision. And then at the end of the day, they may be providing a decent income, but if they aren't there to provide emotional support for their wife, they aren't there to provide, you know, modeling for their children, then they oftentimes end up in a divorce. The wife leaves, the child leaves, or if they don't, they quit working and they don't know their children, or they don't know their wife. And so the provision is more than just, what shall I do? But how shall I provide for my family, provide emotional provision, provide spiritual leadership, provide that modeling there, as well as going forth and laboring to provide materially. So I think that's one of my first pieces, because it's such a trap that men can fall into. That,
yeah, I know. I mean,
not working.
It's typical, right? That in America, the first question people ask you is, "What do you do?"
What do you do?
Yeah, you know, and you feel like you got to come up with a really good answer to satisfy someone's curiosity. Tell me, give me a specific example from either your own life or something close to you of what that looks like to not just provide financially, but to provide emotionally. Like, what are some of the things you do in your family that make that a reality?
So I have three boys, and they, you know, each are of an age where they've started, I mean, my oldest more than my younger two, but they've all kind of looked at what will I do? You know, I'm going to be a firefighter. I'm going to be a cop. I'm going to help Poppy on the farm, you know? And while encouraging all those, you start young talking about, yeah, you could absolutely be an astronaut, but that doesn't leave a lot of room for family. So that's something that you wanted to, like, we start young measuring the cost. I mean, not in a very serious way. I mean, go be an astronaut, but we implant young the idea of, just because you're the man doesn't mean that you also don't have to think about the amount of time that your job would take away from your family, how it works in with a family. Your family is not your add-on. Your job is not your life. Your job is your add-on. Your family, your focus is, if you're going to choose a family, if you're going to choose to have a family, then that is your focus. That is your care. And so weaving that into provision, weaving other thoughts and forms of how to provide into that is big. As well as, you know, there's the idea of aggression, of anger, of that move toward turning emotion into action that is kind of built into to men, even very, very young boys, turning that toward, why are you feeling what you're feeling? What are you going to do with that? You know, so that there is a framework that they can talk with to emotionally support others, right? So it's something where absolutely, where we've kind of dichotomized the two and into, you can either be, you know, the strong guy that goes out and provides, or you can be this, but they aren't intertwined. You're not going to have a successful family life if you're not thinking intentionally about it, thinking about provision, thinking about weaving that in. So that's something we started young with our children, and something that we've tried to incorporate into especially our oldest thinking about, you know, because he's talked about when I'm older, I'm going to be a dad and I'm going to be this. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah. But you're going to have to, you know, think about that. So what does being a dad mean? Who comes first? Who do you serve? How do you lead? You know? And so just starting that stuff young so that there's stuff germinating in there because you never know exactly what they pick up. And you, I mean, you can have the fun conversations. I'm not saying be only, you know, you have to have your life planned and set, but do include ideas of purpose, of provision, of what that means, because the world will tell them early enough, you have to, what are you going to go be, you know? And what I want my children to be are kind, honorable, emotionally and physically strong young men. What they do is secondary to that.
You find yourself focusing on virtues as far as the kind of person they're going to be instead of on production. Maybe that's the way to say it.
Yeah, virtues and interests. So they each, you know, have their own interests. And so we're all called to be something that God has designed us to be, right? They're all called to use what's already innate and built in us to a purpose, right? And so we play on strengths that are already there. Like my oldest is, he loves to make people laugh, almost to a fault. He'd be the class clown. You know, he's, we homeschool. So, but I guess, I mean, he already is a class clown. He makes his brothers laugh, but like he will do anything to get a laugh, including making himself be laughed at. Right. And so what is the purpose? Are they laughing with you? Are they laughing at you? And the same words, like you have been given a great gift. Like laughter is a fantastic gift, but how are you using it here? Right. And drawing those virtues into the conversation are beginning around five or so, because I mean, it's we're getting very little around five. We're picking up more now, but I really like the example of, I'm not sure if you are aware, the four cardinal virtues that were present in classical education that were picked up in Christian education. So one of the virtues is prudentia, prudence, right? And so it's often going to translate as wisdom, but that's not accurate. Sepertina would be wisdom. The idea of what is the right action or the right response for the right situation is prudentia, right? It's related to wisdom, but it's different. And so like most of us, he does not always think before he does. And so like, you're right, this could be the right response, but is it for this? Is this what the right action for this response? Is it overkill? What are you trying to do, right? And so just instilling those virtues in a practical way at a young age, but then not neglecting their greater calling, right? Because boys and young men both want to serve something greater, something deeper, right? And I think we cheat ourselves when we only instill virtues are do's, not be's, right? It's not just doing, it's being, right? You act prudently because you are prudent. Not necessarily, I mean, the fool can act prudent if he wants to, but it's not a virtue if he only picks it up every 5 to 10 years. And so there's the idea of giving over to the service of a greater cause can be really attractive for young men that are looking to, you know, do something, looking to give to something, looking to hero worship in some way, and having heroes that are worthy of, you know, that kind of fetish, having virtues that are worthy of a greater and higher service can really call you into that. So we do the do's right now because he's a little young for that. But as they grow older, having that idea that, you know, these are their aspirations and ideals is what part of virtues as well. Aspects and characters of our God that we get to share in as his co-workers, that we get to model in our lives, that we get to bring forth and do as his fellow laborers is an exciting way to think of virtue, you know?
It's interesting because you become what you do, right? In many ways, the things you practice, you become that.
Yeah.
You start to, it becomes habitual. And then what do you call it except that's who you are? And that goes both ways, right? With vices and with virtues. I heard a quote once recently that the person said, you know, how do you become a dirty old man? You start as a dirty young man, and then you become a dirty old man. And I think the same is true for being a virtuous old man or a virtuous middle-aged man. You start by being a virtuous young man, and so those things take time to develop into something that becomes part of your ethos.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned priority also. So provision, providing emotionally, not just financially, providing relationally. And help me understand, what do you mean by priority? Where does that come in?
So there are so many things that call for our attention, right? We live in an age that is abounding in different things calling for our attention. From our job would love us to have 100% attention on it. Our phone is always calling us away. Our friendships are. So starting priority as a, I can only do so many things in the hour allotted to me. What am I going to choose to do? And you playing with that as natural consequences, right? You could do this, you could do this, you could do that, right? Like, what do you want to spend your time on? What do you want to, what do you want to set as your priority? And then you can come to this later if you have time, but if you only get to do one or two things, what are you putting your energy, your effort, and your focus into? Because we only have so much time here. And I'm going to actually steal something from, is it Father Ricardo? I don't know. So hopefully I don't get in trouble with the copyright. I think it's Father Ricardo, but he says that one of the greatest things you can do is waste time with God, right? Because time is the commodity you can never get back. You can earn more money. You can get more fame. You can get more friends. The one thing that shows where your priority is where you choose to waste time. Not spend time as far as, I need to get this done, so I'm going to put this much time, but just choosing to be in the presence and to enjoy and to take those moments and to give them over to when he uses the term waste time with God in prayer, but which I like, because at first you're like, how is that wasted time? But I get what he's saying, right? You only have so many minutes, hours, days. You do a lot. I've only got this much time. I give it to me quick. I've got. But when you're with your friend, when you're with your wife, when you're putting down your phone, you're putting down your watch, you're putting down, you know, and you're just being in the presence of each other. So where you choose to waste your time is where your highest priority is, kind of where your heart is, where your.
Is there your heart? Treasure,
your also. Heart also, yeah. And the greatest treasure is your time. You can't ever get that back.
That's good. So what does that look like? How do you teach your boys that idea?
So we're going down to my father-in-law's. They call him Poppy. And Poppy is fun. It's a hobby farm. There's horses. There's a lake. There's cousins. It's fun. But it's so fun, it can get overwhelming, especially at Christmas time. Because you go down and all the cousins are there. All the presents are there. All the fun activities are there. All the fun food is there. It's an overload almost. And my oldest can really get caught up in I want to do that. And he feels like he's missing out no matter what he chooses, because there's so much to do. And so really sitting him down and saying, well, I get that there's so many fun things. What is the one thing you want to choose to do that we make sure gets done? What do you want to do that you feel like you absolutely want to do this? And sometimes something you could do at home. And I'm just like, really? Is that what you want? You really want to watch Paw Patrol for the 84th time? That's what you want to do today? But I mean, I let him make that choice, though. I let him choose that. I mean, I'll try to redirect him, but I'll let him make that choice. If it's not going to be harmful, it's not going to affect his behavior, it's not going to, you know, okay, that's the choice you're going to make. But, and then he'll get upset about the fact that he didn't get to go biking or out to the ditch or, you know, and well, that this is what you chose. So maybe next time you choose something that prioritizes your cousins, we don't see them as often, and we can watch this when we get back. And sometimes it sinks in and hits, and sometimes it doesn't. But over time, it hits more. Over time, there's a buildup of, you know, I can only spend so many minutes, so many hours. And it's a reflection back too. You know, when we're tired, when we get home, when we don't want to play Nerf guns or run through, Where's our priority at? What are we going to be wasting our time on ourselves or in giving it out to others? And sometimes it is ourselves. Sometimes we need to recoup. But if we don't do that check, we'll always fall into the immediate, I'm just going to be lazy. I've earned it. I'm going to sit here. And so the priority goes both ways. We teach it to our children, but it's also a good check on our heart. Where am I putting my time? Where am I putting my priority? How am I reinvesting back in? Just because I'm here, am I present? So this kind of leads to the door third.
Yeah, that's right. It does lead to the third. So you try and walk your kids through when you prioritize, when they prioritize something, this is the consequence. You choose this, you get this. But you're also saying no to something else when you choose this. It's almost like the opportunity cost question. But you're actively trying to teach that even at a young age, trying to help them understand that you can do, I heard someone said, you can do anything, but you can't do everything. That sort of principle.
Yeah.
And yep. every choice you make comes with benefits and consequences. That's really good. I like that. Which does lead us into presence. So I assume you're being present with your family.
Yes, being present with your family and the presence that you project, both. So you want to be, you want to take that time, you want to waste that time with your family. You want to spend the time that you can with them. But that doesn't necessarily mean because you're in the same room that you're present. So often it can be, I know it can happen in my household, and I know it can happen in a lot of households. We sit down and then I just want to scroll. I just want to shut off my brain and just be. Or you can play, but play quietly, right? This is our downtime. This is where we're, sometimes that's necessary. I'm not saying it's never necessary. But again, what are you projecting with your presence? Because kids pick up on a lot more than we think they do, even at younger ages than we think they do, because we're so set on cognitive development that we don't think about the fact that neurodevelopment begins in the womb. It's very much, they don't understand. They may not understand, but they still pick up. They still feel. They still sense the vibes, as it were. They still get stuff. And it has an effect, and they react accordingly. So are you intentionally trying to work out and quell arguments with your wife, or are you just having the hostile either side of the room, right? And well, we're together. I'm here. What more do you want? Are we, displaying the kind of love that we want our kids to display to their future wives so that being present with them is not just giving them 100% of our focus, but it's being present and our presence, right? So even if we're not giving them our attention, the people that we are giving attention to or the things we are giving attention to model and display what we want them to grow up to be, right? So what we want them to see. So if there are times when, I'm saying morning prayer, and I love that you have some dinosaur facts, but right now I'm going to finish prayer. You're more than welcome to join me, but you can't interrupt, right now mommy and I are talking. We haven't talked all day. I'm going to take some time and I'm going to talk to mommy, and I will talk to you in X amount of, so even when we're not directly connecting, we are being aware of how we're presenting. So presence is not just connecting, although that's part of it. It's also how we're presenting our intentionality in other aspects to our wife, to our activities, to even to our friends, right? Like even when you have friends over and you're playing games or whatever, think back to when you were a kid and how you saw your parents play around or whatever, and it made an effect. It had an effect. If you saw them...
It's like you're saying, in some ways, you're saying that you present your priorities to your children. So, you saying that, hey, I'm going to finish my morning prayers, like you're showing them that for you, that's a priority. And they said that it's caught, not taught, right? It's like... We see priorities in action every day, and gosh, I would have to think through my own life to think, what priorities am I displaying to my children that probably I would, yeah, would, if I was to really look at, would disapprove of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's telling when you hear a tone used or a word used, then you're like, oh, I recognize that. I recognize that. You know?
Yeah. That sounds like me. How odd.
I said, talk nicely to your brothers. And then I realized that the tone he's using, he picked up directly from me when I'm, you know, disciplining with, I have a short temper or something. I recognize it. And so when I say, you know, please use a nicer tone, you can tell him not to do that, but nicer tone, felt a reflection back. How is my tone when I'm presenting? Because they see, they pick up our presence with them is important, but also how we present our presence. You know, there's a, I'm not saying be stoic, but you need to be intentional.
Yeah, that's great. Those are all fantastic. And do you have any other final things you must do with your family's call to other dads?
The do that I would say with your family is to enjoy. If you genuinely enjoy your wife, your children, your family, it will show. Now, because the do is going to be different for everybody. Some people are going to be more go out and do. Some people are going to stay in and do. Some people are going to, you know, the do might look different. The activity might look different. But what I want dads to do is to enjoy their family and be proud of their family and find, you know, the fact that their role is primarily here, whatever their purpose is here, whatever their job, whatever their task is at hand. This is what we're doing it for. And if you're not coming back and loving and enjoying and investing into this, then why are you breaking your back out there?
What would you recommend for dads who are struggling to enjoy their family? What's the first step that they can take to moving in that direction?
I would say the first thing that you can do is to find an activity that you can connect with together that you already enjoy. If you are moving together with a purpose, it really helps draw you together, especially for guys, right? Like there's the oftentimes, and I'm generalizing here largely, but often women can tread water and the emotional connection is enough. They're just staying in the same place in there. Guys largely form those connections by task orientation, by going forward to something. So find something that you already enjoy, whether that be, you know, fishing, games. In my case, I mean, I'm a huge nerd, love Star Trek. All three of my boys are said to be Trekkers so far. My wife vaguely tolerates it. My ships ended up from the living room all the way back here to the library by the end of our courtship. But find what you already enjoy. If you're struggling with that, find what you already enjoy and then orient your family together toward something that you already enjoy. Share yourself, your passions, your life with them. Don't expect to necessarily focus on the enjoyment yourself, right? When you go fishing with kids, you're not fishing. The kids are fishing, right? Like you're going to be doing lures. You're going to be doing, so it's, you have to remember the purpose. The purpose is not just so that I can enjoy on my own, right? The purpose is so I can enjoy it together. So it may take some intentionality at first. It may take some introducing to what you like about it to them, finding what they might like about it. And it may be a little intentional at first, but if you can enjoy it with them, it's a great first step toward enjoying them, you know, enjoying being there present together and having that. That makes sense.
No, that's great. So you've brought your sons along with you on the Star Trek journey.
I have. I started him young though. I started him young.
Awesome, man. And Mike, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.